Hi, this is Avram Rosenzweig, and welcome back to the Avram Rosenzweig Show. And this is show 5, and I am delighted to be back with you. And I'll tell you why in a couple of minutes, vis-a-vis my guests. But before we dive into that, it's going to be a fascinating conversation. I do want to welcome everybody, and I want to say that since this podcast restarted or relaunched in the guise of Hat Radio, which is what I used to do, that we've been showing a lot of success. And of course, that makes me really happy. And it does for two reasons. Number one is I eventually want to make some money from this. So hopefully we can evolve into a place where this is monetized, and monetized perhaps in a very, very healthy way. But even more importantly is that the role or the goal of this podcast and what I'm trying to achieve is for the world to get to know each other, is for we who are listening to be able to hear within our guests, and I say our because it is our guest, this is our podcast, specifics about their life that we can hear, listen to, and say, yeah, you know what, I have similar stuff in my life. I myself have gone through that. I do feel that way. Yes, I understand their celebrations and their happiness, but I also understand their pain and suffering. The world at 7.5 billion people seems very vast, but the truth of the matter is it's really not that big. You know, there's classic stories of astronauts who took off, you know, from Florida Space Center. And as they got higher and higher and higher, they looked at the world and they could see no longer did they divide it up into continents or into countries, of course. But then they just saw it as one planet, right? Just the Earth. And it's all of ours, and we inhabit it, and we're not here for very long. So while we're here, we have to make sure that we listen as closely as possible to others to try to understand them, hence to understand ourselves. Because so much of what we do is in contrast or relative to what other people do. Man and woman are not islands. We are not. We inhabit this earth together. It is all of our responsibilities. And it's said that when something happens in a small town, in a small province in China, that it affects me, maybe directly, here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. So the essence of this podcast really is to create some sort of community, a community in which people can feel a sense of relief, can feel a sense of goodness, can think to themselves, yeah, you know what? That's my neighbor. And welcome. Welcome, neighbor. So let us do that in actuality. Welcome one of our neighbors. And her name is Evelisa Genova. And she is in Rome, Italy right now. And she's a very, very dear friend of mine. How are you?
I am very good and very grateful to be here. And so happy to hear the way you introduced the session today.
Yeah, what did you like about it?
I love the fact that we're, you know, you're trying to build bridges of understanding and just make a more compassionate world, make us a little bit less alone and isolated, even just mentally, and realize that we're kind of all in this together. This meaning yes. Life itself as a sacred mystery.
So as I mentioned before, you're in Rome. You're there with your fiance, Mazel Tov. Congratulations.
Thanks.
You're engaged. That's really exciting. His name is Fulvio. Yes. I love the Italian names in your family. I mean, you're Sicilian, right?
Yes.
Wow, I just love the
probably.
Name. Probably.
We're
going to
probably.
Okay, well, good to hear. We'll investigate your DNA later. But we'll go through some of the names later. But my question to you, in Rome, when you're walking the streets, being that you're from Toronto, you've lived in LA, do you see the people there as your neighbors? Do you see them as sharing this planet with you? Mm. Or do you have a sense of being foreign in Rome, in Italy?
I think that's actually a very interesting question, specifically to me, because I've spent my whole adult life, really, you could even argue younger than adult life, always kind of searching and seeking for home in a way, or a place that I feel like I belong. And I In some ways, you can say I've never quite found it, but also in other ways, you can say like I found myself feeling comfortable and connected with people in many different places. There's a number of reasons for that that we could analyze, but when I went to Egypt and going to Alexandria for the first time, so even that coastal town, and feeling like I could see myself and the people around me, or one of my first major kind of ventures traveling as a young woman was going to India. Really nothing for any spiritual seeking. It was really just to understand the world, not from the North American perspective that I grew up with.
Yes.
And that was really special for me. And now even going to Sicily, kind of where my origins are from, I actually found that a lot of myself made the most sense in Sicily.
How
It's kind
so?
of interesting. It's kind of a mix of things there, even just historically, like the mix of influences. The location that it's at, just geographically, has made it kind of the stopping point for many cultures and conquerors from different regions. You have the influence of the Moors, Arabic influence, Greek. There's just a whole bunch of things that have made themselves influential there. And then, of course, Italian and Roman. So I think that complex mix, it actually makes the most sense.
Interesting thing about Sicily, by the way, it's the largest island in the Mediterranean. Did you know that? It also has its own language. People speak Sicilian.
I love saying that, even though
Do
I don't speak it.
you don't speak any Sicilian?
No, I mean, I grew up with the dialect.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, forgive me. It's not a dialect, it is its own language.
Yeah,
But
yeah, yeah.
those things are being lost because of the normalized or standardization of Italian, I guess. So even in the young people now, you don't hear the accent as much. You hear just a little bit more of a standardized Italian.
It's locals consider themselves Sicilians before Italians. Did you know that?
Very much so, 100%.
Yeah. Do you call yourself Italian or Sicilian?
I say Sicilian,
You say Sicilian.
even though I didn't grow up there. But I think just this life journey that I was sharing with you before, I feel very connected, even just culturally, to the mix of influences that Sicily is about.
Okay, so now that we have the prelude to our conversation,
Yes.
let's tell our listeners who you are. Okay,
Yeah.
you and I met, I don't know, it's probably about 10 years already, right?
Yes.
We met
Yeah.
through a friend, and I was taken by you immediately. Firstly, because you're a Harvard graduate, and I see life divided into two. There are Harvard graduates, and there are graduates everywhere else.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I
What a
know.
binary.
No, I know that. And you got your master's in education, and so that is pretty incredible. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, she's a Harvard graduate. That's pretty impressive. And then we started talking about Judaism because I always thought you, I don't know, you strike me as being a Jew, you know?
That's a
And
compliment.
then you said to me, oh, that's funny that you say that because I always wondered about Judaism and if it would be good for me. Are you still looking into Judaism, by the way?
I continue to follow parshas, especially with Rabbi David Foreman. Not that I
Yeah.
don't like your part when you do parsha talks, but I do follow a couple of rabbis, and I like the inquiring and the investigation into meanings and layers of the book.
You think you'll
So
convert one day?
it's something that I'm very open to. It's something that I kind of surrender a little bit on that process and that journey. And Judaism has been a very important influence in my life, even just from a personal perspective. But yeah, it's something that I'm very open to.
Does Fulvio know all this?
Yes, he
Oh,
does.
well, will he convert with you then?
He's very Fulvio is a deeply spiritual person,
Yes.
and I think he sees a lot of wisdom in many different traditions, but not even like in an esoteric kind of way, casual way. He has been very studious in different practices, from the Upanishads to even the Bible, the Christian Bible, to understanding Buddhism and even approaches to Judaism as well, and understanding, the way we read text, even in those different traditions. So for him, it's less about being in one and more about continuously, seeking and uncovering the truth and wisdom in these different insights.
And now that you've been get together for a while, do you still have deep intellectual conversations or have those stopped?
No, very much so. That's
Good.
actually, I'm continuously being challenged even by Fulvio himself, challenged in a good way, intellectually. I was immediately impressed with his inquiring mind and inquiring into, the spiritual truths and spiritual journey of humanity through the ages. I think that's something that's not distant and far off. That continues to, we continue to work through this as human beings to this day. And understanding.
I'm so happy to hear that because I was worried about you. You know, you're such a unique human being with a very particular type of intellect, very particular type of a sort of feel for life. And it's very hard to find a match for somebody like you. So I think, A, it's really good you left Toronto. I like Toronto and I like it more as I get older, but this is not really a place for Harvard graduates. And then you went to LA and you found Fulvia there and now you're in Rome. And I think your evolution is going really well from my perspective. I hope that's
Thank
okay
you.
with you. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And I
So
think,
let go ahead. Yeah.
no, I was just going to say, Harvard graduates, I think, could flourish in many different places. And I think
I know.
Toronto has its beauty to it. And I think it's just for me, it was, I think I was, it left me a little bit yearning for other things, which I guess human beings can always feel that wherever we grow up. I'm sure someone somewhere else was yearning for Toronto, so I would never want to
Yeah.
minimize that.
You're,
It's
no, no,
interesting how it's all about.
you're 100% right. I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to Toronto. And the reason, like a reverse snob, because I think we're very young and therefore we're still lacking a lot of warmth. We're very young and therefore we're still lacking a lot of independent thinking. And we're still lacking inspiration. So that's my take on Toronto. Like, I think when I was younger, had I had the wherewithal to choose another city, I probably would have. I really like what
Yes.
you're doing. I love that you went to LA. I love that you're in Italy. I love that you were in India. That's great for the development of who you are. And I think that has to happen with more Torontonians because we're still a little bit rural in our own way, you know?
Yeah, I think j just to finalize this type of conversation, I know you want to move on to other things, but I feel like what I can never underestimate, however, is the thing about Canada. I'm not even going to really say the urban centers, like Toronto or anything, but the thing about Canada is that it is grappling with itself in a way that, in some ways, America could be more nuanced in these conversations, but grappling with its own history, and that includes, the societies that were there, before Toronto was like an urban center for other people, right? So when I'm speaking of the First Nations, Métis, and Inuit societies, and the stories and the identities that were making up this region of Canada. And I think you see more of that conversation in the cities that are in Canada. Probably BC has a little bit of that more visible, and that's for a whole bunch of reasons I don't need to, get into now. But I think I like how in the cities in Canada, though, that conversation and maybe that, investigating the origins, it's a bit more visible in the cities than you see in other places. Maybe in places like New Zealand, that could be more visible, but I do appreciate how in Canada, there is more of a space for that to be a part of it. There's different worldviews that exist in
Yeah,
this
no,
world. That's cool.
I completely accept that. Completely accept it. And just a sidebar is that I've been involved in many, many different communities within Toronto over the years. The Ethiopian community,
And that's how we know each other
Roma
through
community.
Vehafta as well, which you started and which is
Right.
amazing.
Right. And so I love that aspect of who we are and how we all come together on that basis. So no question about it. There are wonderful things about this country. And I think that you're positioning it very well in terms of the nuanced discussions that we're having. So I want to get back to what I was saying before. So I've known
Yes,
you for
please.
about 10 years. I love the fact that you're a Harvard graduate. I love all Harvard graduates. And I also am blown away by the road that you've got on in life, career-wise. So let me read something from your bio, and I think this will give our listeners a sort of a sense of who you are and where you're going. You said, "My career has been guided by a passion for creating better systems, plus conditions for human potential in diverse sectors." Right? Since graduating from Harvard with a master's in education, I have over 10 years of experience as a strategist in complicated and intense environments, government policy, negotiations, tech and startup environments, diplomacy, and nonprofits. And then we're going to move over to the artistic side of you. And here's what was written about you in terms of that. Evelisa, I love your name, Evelisa, strives to be a mentor and a leader for young girls that she always searched for in her childhood. Painting has been Evelisa's preferred language of the heart. It's a nice way of saying it. She has had a unique artistry that combines classical tradition with surreal and allegorical painting styles. And her paintings are meant to be intimate celebrations of life and love of popular figures or our most intimate dreamscapes. Nicely written. I'm assuming you wrote those, right? Nice
Yes.
job. Really nice job.
Thank you.
So give us a sense of, if I ask an accountant, what do you do? And she responds, well, I'm an accountant and I look at people's books and I try to help them in terms of development of their finances. Oh, I'm a dentist, right? You're a dentist. What do you do? Well, I pull teeth, right? What do you do?
Thank you for the question.
You're welcome.
And thank you for giving the written description. I'm on a mission to have people really feel and experience and realize their full potential. And removing the barriers, whatever it takes, whether that's policies, organizational culture, mindsets of people in an organization, anything that can be a barrier to people being their best selves and realizing their full potential. That can also be, so that can be in the organize, me working in diversity, equity, and inclusion, working with companies on, that type of strategy. We can get into that. That's why the diverse sectors, you can apply that across different sectors. Or in my art, which is where it becomes, that's maybe a language of strategy in mind, and then this is the language of the heart, which is when I work closely with people, my process is listening to their story and their journey and kind of illuminating key symbols, in the painting so they can be reminded of their own best selves, their own beauty in their life. So yeah, it's systemic and then the in the creative side.
So
And
let's talk about the systemic side for a little bit. You've been working with Scouts for the last couple of years. Tell us about your work there. They've had their set of challenges.
So I was doing some consulting with Scouts earlier on in the pandemic, and that was some training and workshops on equity and inclusion, and really always framing inclusion is a mindset of how we relate to each other, how we make space for each other to be ourselves, and how we invite people to be their authentic selves, right? And when we don't understand it, what's our mindset when we don't understand people around us? Anyway, there's a whole bunch of things. So that evolved into, being invited to be the National Director of Diversity Inclusion. I applied. And so what this has been is Scouts has a legacy, and it has over 100 plus years of history behind it. And it was, I was tasked with how can we be more inclusive and have a culture of being inclusive. So you're not starting with, it's not a young organization. It's not just starting anew, but this question was new. They never really grappled with how do we systemically make us inclusive and how do we make people believe that we are. And so a lot of the approach that was being the approach, the mindset that was being taken before is, how do we appeal to this group and get more of these people to join us? And like thinking of people in terms of numbers and boxes. And so what I had to do is at the sort of leadership level is rethink our strategy and approach on what does it mean to be inclusive and how do we create the best conditions that will invite and welcome naturally people who, are from different walks of life. So that meant instead of looking out there and see how do we appeal to other people to, and how do we almost do this missionary work of like spread the word of what we do, I focused on let's do some data analysis. Let's actually do an audit of our organization and where it stands. What are the gap, a gap analysis basically of what are our practices? What are our behaviors? And how do people externally see those things? And what are the root causes of the gaps?
What
When
did
you
you
look,
find?
we're in that process still because it's been really heavy and there's a lot of heavy lifting in it, but we're seeing already there's a need to really own the history and how the original scouting was designed and what its original intent was. It was kind of spreading Victorian ideals, and wanting to really spread Anglicizing values wherever it was across the Commonwealth. And that's had some effect and on people who aren't a part of that, who don't see themselves in that, or were affected by the
Wow.
Commonwealth and colonialism.
No,
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was the mission statement or that was the
It's
goal.
not quite the mission statement, but it is what people see who aren't
Right.
involved in the work. It is about empowering young people to be great citizens. It's about young people having these amazing values of like being leaders. So those are the good, and also having values of stewardship. Those are good things. But they're still grappling with why aren't we quote unquote diverse? Why aren't more people involved, And
Yes.
that question, it's deeper than just what does our marketing look like? It's what's the culture, what's outdoor culture, and who does that tend to be culturally safe for? And who is it not culturally safe for? What has been our involvement and our relationship with Indigenous peoples on this land? We're a land-based organization. We operate on the land. Let's go closer into what that relationship has been like.
So
And
let's switch over here for a little bit. You seem to have a very strong affinity for the native community, right? A few years ago, when you were in Canada and you were looking for some opportunities, I introduced you to Phil Fontaine, who's a former chief of the Assembly of Nations, pretty prolific character, and you started to do some work in that area. What is it about the native community, both in terms of your art and in terms of the systemic side of life, as you call it, that draws you to them? What is it about the native community?
well, I think it goes back to me being committed to, people removing barriers for people to have their fullest potential and for us to just have this equitable system. And I think if you care about that work and you're also benefiting in our country, in Canada, or even in the US, across the Americas, really. It's a little bit hypocritical, or it's not complete unless you are addressing the longest standing relationship that we have in this land, which is with the original peoples. And so I've just always been committed to, okay, given who I am, not being Indigenous, being a painter, being someone with the skill set that I have, what's the best way that I can be of service to? To make, because that sets a tone to me, in my opinion, and from what I've heard in my journey and listening to people from different walks of life and influence in First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities, that really sets a tone for how we treat everyone. It helps us to be more consistent with our values of caring about, people, even values of multiculturalism, values of being an equitable and inclusive society. So, in the art space, it's been, I have curated shows that involved different people with different walks of life. And I just think artists they are the experts in their own lived experiences. And I think if we can curate art from directly from the artists who have their own experiences and identities, that's a wonderful way to learn about each other. Art is this sort of like safe ground for us to learn about each other and
Right.
space for each other.
You're talking about curating various different shows. You did one in LA. You called the new NFT exhibit, Transform LA. I think flipping through the literature on that, I think your fiance was involved in that. No? Is he an artist as well? Okay, so that's terrific. And I do want to add that one of the reasons I like you is because you're very generous of spirit. A few years ago, you did excuse me, you did an art show in Toronto, and I think there were about six or seven or eight other artists on top of your work, one of whom was me. And I was very deeply, deeply touched by the fact that you asked me to be part of that show. And I was A, because I've never been part of an art show before. I really don't show my art. It's more for myself. Sometimes I'll give it away to family and friends, but the idea of being out there made me feel both very naked, very bare, but on the other hand, made me feel very, very good. And as though, you know what, maybe my art is worth something, worthwhile enough to show other people. So I want to thank you publicly for making me part of that. That was a very generous of spirit thing that you did, and you never ever made me feel, or any other artist in that show, as though they were secondary to your art. Never. It was a
No
beautiful
way.
experience.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
so good.
It was
I'm so glad
lovely.
because
Lovely.
the art is it's a communication tool from your heart and soul, and you are worth being seen and understood. So that's why it's so important to me to curate spaces that are about the artist's voice. I want to make the artist and the creation extremely important. There is a debate in art whether like the creation, if you think of Picasso or other folks who might have not the most pleasant personalities and track record, separating the artist from the art. And I'm going in the opposite direction. I'm making those two things absolutely critical and needing to be heard and celebrated and elevated. I'm on that for me is definitely my mission when in the art space and curating works.
Yeah, you said that not every artist is an entrepreneur, but they might as well be, right?
You can be. I mean, I've definitely benefited very, it wasn't very easy, but I've had to learn how to be more entrepreneurial in my mindset when it comes to art. And I'm still learning to this day. I'm not perfect at it.
You painted some very interesting pieces. You painted a piece of Tupac, right?
I
The
did,
rapper
yes.
who was murdered. Why did you paint a portrait of him?
That is, it's a part of a series that I do ongoing series of people of influence in different ways, but I try to convey their vulnerability. And I think I would say he has a lot of wisdom and insight into the human soul, into the soul of a man of his time. And I think that needs to be loved and showcased in a way that's a little bit different than the popular image that people might have of him. And so I have him, his back is bare with an owl representing wisdom and a white crane. I just think that I think emphasizing his soul and the wisdom of his soul is a really important takeaway from Tupac, who has influenced so many.
What happened to that picture?
It's still available for sale.
Okay. What about the one you did of Barack Obama and his wife?
That one is about Michelle, actually. I center Michelle on that. So that is about, as a couple. The painting is more about the dynamic of them as a couple and her, as opposed to just about Barack. He's kind of being dissolved into the flowers. And I have Michelle in red. She's holding it all together. She's actually very earth energy in their relationship dynamic. And he's embracing her. She's sort of like celebrated and supported by all this nature. They have their hands together in the corner that's glowing. I'm sure we could put a picture of the piece, but It's celebrating her, uplifting her femininity and her strength. And again, that I think is something that's important to highlight. And I do love and admire their relationship dynamic. I think it's something that we can, a lot of us can learn from.
Yeah, they seem to be very much in love, don't they?
Yeah, I don't think it came easy either. I think there were a lot of choices they had to make in order to build that love and that resilience. But how rare to see that type of example in the position that they are in, even to this day.
Yeah, they're both very effusive in that way. They don't hold back their feelings, even publicly, and similarly with their two daughters.
I think they have a standard of excellence, even aside from all the role and the complications of leading, the United States and all the policy flaws and all of that. That aside, I think they have outstanding standards of excellence in their own personal selves that I think can't go understated, overstated, pardon me.
Yes, and I think it's very important nowadays, just as I spoke about at the beginning of our podcast, but the idea that we are a one, we share this plan. And I think it's important for the President of the United States or any leadership at that level or a similar level anyway, to show the love for their family, you know, to be
Yeah.
effusive, to be out there, to let people know that I can be a very important woman, I can be a very important man. And what goes along with that is are my feelings for the people whom I love and
Totally.
like, my friends, and they do that very well. I know that you were on a trek, you were on a sort of a journey, Abrahamic in nature, to actually deliver paintings of these very influential people. Did that any of that come to fruition?
It didn't actually.
It did not.
And I had this painting of Drake. I had the painting of Obama. I have these works that I think my art right now is in a bit of a incubation period, perhaps. And yeah, that hasn't happened yet. Let's just say yet. They're there. I've gone through my own personal growth. My own personal transformations, and maybe that might have been a prerequisite. But
Right, right.
yeah, those things haven't happened yet. But I was on quite a mission at one point.
Oh, you were. I remember that. We tried to get you some introductions, but I know from our end,
Yeah.
it didn't come to fruition, did it?
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. I'm patient and I feel like I continue to grow as a person and I will continue to be even a better version of myself when that time comes.
So you paint in oils, you paint in acrylics, you paint in waters, right?
I paint in oil and I paint in watercolor and I use gold leaf in most of my work.
Yes, I love that you do that.
Yeah,
It
I
really
love that.
adds to it.
I want the works to be empowering for the viewer. I want there to be a sense of beauty, a sense of mystery, and yeah, a touch of the what I did a little video recently documenting my watercolors, which I've never done before. I've always uplifted the oil paintings, but the watercolors are important because water is so elemental and it's something that's found anywhere you go. And the watercolors are also easier for me technically, like when I'm traveling. Oil paints are like it's a bit more of a to do, right? But the watercolors are much easier to travel with. And water is this element that you can find wherever you go. So you can take a bit of water from, the river where you are, or the lake, or something like this. So you can always have an element of where you are in the painting.
Oh,
And
what
then
a nice thought.
when you contrast the water, which is staining the paper, that's the watercolor, with gold, this very strong metal, precious metal, and you have those things contrasting together on the page. It's quite profound for me personally. And so that's why I'm very committed. I'm really exploring right now the watercolors and that the contrast of the sensitivity, the elemental quality of the material, and the strong luxury and this luxury and strength of the precious metal.
And you have a very broad way of thinking, I think, when it comes to your art. I think if I were to qualify your art, I would say it's very nuanced, it's very detailed, yet by the same token, it's also very impressionistic. It's you know, one would look at your art and say, my God, you spend an inordinate amount of time on each and every picture. Now that is somewhat, it's almost anathema to how I approach my art, because I want to get in there, I want to get messy, I want the canvas to be messy, and I want to finish it as quickly as possible. Whereas you are very, very concentrated. You're very specific in terms of your discipline and your approach, your relationship to your pictures, to your paintings. How indeed would you qualify your art? If someone said to you, what is your art?
They're dreamscapes. I think that's first and foremost, because I think the dreamscape, it combines the fact that there's a lot of symbolism and a bit of an allegory, a bit of a story with it's a landscape, some type of scape. You know, it's kind of a bit surreal, a bit of impressions. It is definitely a balance and or tension even between some elements of realism and then kind of obscure, abstract space and time. So those things are there, but always I want to approach the work with sensitivity, with care, and I want to build a bridge with the viewer. You know, invite them into something that's beautiful but mysterious, but makes them feel just inspired, actually.
My nephew Mayer recently spoke at my brother-in-law's yahrzeit site. Do you know what a yahrzeit site is?
No,
It's a
tell me.
memorial of his death. David was murdered at Lawrence and Bathurst 20 years ago, and every year my sister makes a memorial where we all get together and we speak about David. My nephew Mayer, who's a Harvard graduate, he was the last speaker. And my son Noah turned to me afterwards. He says, "Daddy, I think he's the smartest in the family."
Noah, that's funny. I love it.
I said, honey, that's probably true, you know. And what was interesting and compelling about his speech was highly thought out. Yeah, it had this beautiful spontaneity to it, had this beautiful bounce to it. He came up with a concept that nobody had spoken about, not that evening, and probably not in the previous 20 years. And he developed it really well. And when he stood up there, Evelisa, and he was expressing his thoughts, he did so, from what I can remember, without notes. And also in a way which he had such command of his ideas and the people in the room. And I say this because you can see that I have a personal, like a feeling for Harvard graduates. And of course, it's absurd to think that every Harvard graduate is, at the top of their game, no matter what they do, and the best people in the world. I understand that. But we all have these things in our head where this is the best, you know? And I often thought that about Harvard. Harvard is generally rated number three in America in terms of colleges and universities. Did you know that, by the way?
I didn't know that.
You did or you did not?
No.
What do you think number one and any thoughts?
Well, impressive that your son Noah picked up on the genius of your relative there.
Yeah. I just want to stay with this thought for a sec. Number one is Princeton. Princeton is number one. Okay. And number two, University or College in the United States, is MIT. And Harvard is third. But again, in reading about Harvard and in knowing people who have graduated there, I'm really taken by the educational system, because the way Mayer explained it to me, my nephew, and tell me if you concur with this, if this was your experience, that a class will come together almost like a community. And they will take an issue, a challenge, a problem, and together sort of pull it apart and debate it and grapple with it, put it back together, almost like a team of mechanics who were working on a complex engine. And I love that type of thinking because to me it's very Talmudic in nature. Was that your experience at Harvard?
I would say that I love that he said that, and I was very interdisciplinary when I went because like I was like a kid in a candy store or like it was a playground. And nobody in my family had gone to university before. This is the first, I always wanted to intellectually develop myself. I was always very intellectually curious. And I will say the rigor and the inquiry in anything from like if you go to one of the law school classes to the divinity school, which I think actually my favorite, I had my favorite class was at the divinity school, called The Deep. And it was examining the theme of God and the universe represented by the ocean across different traditions, biblical, mythical. It was absolutely beautiful.
Wait,
But
what did you love about that? Dive into that for a second.
I just love the way in which we understand our relationship to the divine, our relationship to the mystery of life, and how it becomes this overwhelming form called the sea that could at once consume us but also give us life. And so the way that shows up in different traditions, you see that human beings across different cultural backgrounds and ethnic backgrounds and belief systems are grappling with the same thing. And it shows up in our stories. And just the pure passion and inquiry into this, in that course was incredible. But again, the same type of the rigor of thought and analysis is what I think I love the most. And I put myself, I was there, I think even before I could, like I'm still benefiting from my experience there to this day. I think I was,
Your email is from Harvard.
I'm still learning from the people that I met there. As I grow as a person, I continue to go back to my experiences or people and, I guess grow from that. It's just really interesting.
What is it about the people that brings you back to them? What do you like about those individuals?
I'm really humbled and honored by the standards of excellence the people had around me. And I think it pushes me to keep, improving myself, especially when I feel like sometimes I may be a little bit confused or seem like I've lost my way or need to make a critical decision about what am I going to choose. Is it this path for my career or this path for my career, which I feel like I'm at a little bit of a juncture right now, but it's I'm just impressed by people's amazing standards. I think some of it too is I think also I realized there the different mindsets coming from the economic and social structure of Canada versus if you grew up in the US and the way the economy and the social structure influences your thinking. It's I think I don't know if this makes sense. I'm gonna just put it out there and like
Yeah, put it out
this
there.
is kind of how I operate and see things. I feel as though Canada has a bit more of this feminine energy. I don't mean in this out there way, but there's a bit of this care for the fundamental needs of people. And a sense of there's a sense of security at your sort of well-being, your basic well-being. And you could be even more harsh and say it's very middle class, which in some depending on who you ask, that's true. I mean, there's still a lot of economic disparities, rich and poor, that still exists. So, but there is more of a sense of like safety, and you can experiment with ideas. And there's a little bit less risk, even in the entrepreneurial sense. But in the US, this you have to fight even for your basic needs. The conversation around healthcare is like a really good example of that. You can't just assume that that's going to be there. And so it's a bit more, there's a bit more at risk. And you have to think time is money all the time. And how am I going to be? How is something going to benefit me? How can I gain from it? It's a every moment becomes a bit more transactional. And actually, in a way, It's smart to think that. I'm actually going through a bit of that process right now in thinking about how I think about time
Yes.
and value.
Yes.
And there's something quite, you can learn a lot from that and being entrepreneurial. That also leaves huge disparities between rich and poor. And that's a whole other conversation. But it's more masculine competitive energy. Anyway,
Did
that's
you
just.
have to make a transition when you went to Harvard then? Did you have to change your mindset, the way you operated,
I
the
threw
way you thought?
myself into that without realizing it. No, I mean, I didn't realize how much of a difference there is. I think as because Canada is so close on a surface level and maybe geographically, you kind of assume there's enough similarity that you don't need to think about that, but it really is a different way even of relating to people. It's a different way of relating to people. So I'm not saying it's better or worse, but I you know, both come with their consequences.
How were your marks?
I did really well, actually. I did really well because I was very eager and, you know, wanted to do all the things. And yeah,
Did the professors love you?
I got along really well with the professor in the divinity school. That was a chance to actually build a bit more of a relationship. I wish I would have made more relationships with my professors than I did at the time. I think I was so wide-eyed that had I done it now with what I know now, I would have invested more time in my relationships with professors. I was going through a different thing at the time, so I think my relationships would have been better now had I done it now.
When you travel the world, or when you travel Rome or LA or Toronto, and you come across people in the course of the day, as we all do, when you come across somebody who went to Harvard and or is a Harvard graduate, what sort of affinity is there between the two of you?
Well, I think there can be curiosity, and I don't know, I get excited and curious what their story is.
Yeah.
And it's not too romantic. Like, it's nothing too romantic, but it is, you know, it is cool. And I think that really the benefit is the alumni community. And I think if you can tap into the alumni community, and on a, you know, just a professional networking level, that is very helpful.
And do you see people who did not go to Harvard? And once they hear about you graduating from Harvard, is there a certain status in that?
Yeah, I think there could be, but you know, it's not really that place is also has its own, let's say, I don't know, like flaws maybe, or nothing is so quite pristine and perfect, of course, including an institution like that. So, you know, there's definitely high standards when it comes to the academics, which I love. And I've been impressed by people who have no background in education but have the smartest, wisest
Yes.
mind. So I
Yes.
think that wisdom shows up in so many different places other than institutions.
You want to hear something really nice?
Yeah.
There's a book here. I'll show it to you.
Okay.
It's called Working. Working, and it's by Studs Terkel. Have you ever heard of
Okay.
Studs Terkel? I'll tell you who he is, okay? He was born in 1912. Studs Terkel grew up in Chicago. He graduated from University of Chicago, which is a really good university, in 1932, and from the University of Chicago Law School in 34. He has acted in radio soap operas, being a disc jockey, a radio commentator, a TV MC. He traveled all over the world doing on-the-spot interviews. Currently, he has a daily radio program. This is from the early 70s in Chicago, syndicated throughout the country. He is also a winner of the Pulitzer Prize for his best-selling book, The Good War. He wrote this book, which is called Working, once again. And the book essentially is interviews with individuals of all career and job backgrounds.
Nice.
Okay, so I'll give you an example. One of the chapters he deals with is with, hold on a second. People who drive buses, cab drivers, okay, artists. Right? People who are accountants or bookkeepers. Yeah. And the list goes on and on and on. It's about 400 pages, and it's the most fascinating book because it deals with regular folk, as we call them, and talks about their spirit and their response to their jobs. Now, I just want to read to you a few lines at the end of his introduction in sync with what we were just talking about. And he writes, Nora Watson may have said it most succinctly. I think most of us are looking for a calling, not a job. Most of us, like the assembly line workers, have jobs that are too small for our spirit. Jobs are not big enough for people. I'm going to repeat that. Most of us, like the assembly line workers, have jobs that are too small for our spirit. Jobs are not big enough for people. It's very true, isn't it? During my 3 years of prospecting, I may have, on more occasions than I had imagined, struck gold. I was consistently astonished by the extraordinary dreams of ordinary people. No matter how bewildering the times, no matter how dissembling the official language, those we call ordinary are aware of a sense of personal worth, or more often, a lack of it in the work they do. Tom Patrick, the Brooklyn fireman, whose reflections end the book, similarly brings this essay to a close. He says, "The fucking world's so fucked up, the country's fucked up, but the firemen, you actually see them produce. You see them put out a fire. You see them come out with babies in their hands. You see them give mouth to mouth when a guy's dying. You can't get around that shit. That's real. To me, that's what I want to be. I worked in a bank. It's just paper. It's not real. 9 to 5 and it's shit. You're looking at numbers, but I can look back and say, I helped put out a fire. I helped save somebody. It shows something I did on this earth." Now, I read this because it's in light of what you said that you're absolutely right. You do not have to be a Harvard graduate to have an auspicious soul. You don't. There's people whom I meet all the time, right? Some of whom are retired and they're sitting in coffee shops and I speak with them. And they have gems and gems of knowledge based on their time on earth and their experience with other people. Or you can go into an environment that's manufacturing shirts and speak to the men or women who are working those machines and have a really in-depth conversation with them. And it can be indeed soulful. It can be wise. It can be extremely intelligent and smart, very insightful. And you can walk away thinking, my God, how much did I learn from that person? So you're
And
right. Let's not romanticize Harvard too
no,
much,
it's
right?
true. And I think this is a huge thing in how we tell stories about who we're helping in society. Because oftentimes, like, there's a connection in my mind, and hopefully this will make sense. When we show, there might be some expert that goes and finds a community or people that they want to help. Oftentimes, those people are nameless. They might be described as their tribe or their community name or people from this town or this area. Those people have names. Those people have stories. Those people have insights. They are people. And to somehow have, how much are we a product of our own environment and paradigm and system of thinking? The hero's story and the hero's journey, that is not a template that is just for us and like the hero to save other people. Like that's, you can find that hero's journey and story through people from many different places. It doesn't always have to be over. I hope that makes sense. Like
Yeah, it does. It does.
there's, you can use the hero's journey, and at the same time, we're all kind of in this together with the same basic template of life is this finite mystery. And you're no better than I, and vice versa. And, if you really want to get existential about it, we all have that mystery that's ahead of us. But yeah, like there's that compelling story in people, and they don't have to have the romanticized like external things that validate that story. It's there, it's clear. Just know their name, just know who they are. And I think that's the purpose of even what you do, Avram, in the what I've listened to. Even I've listened to Hat Radio before, and it's the purpose of what I love doing when it comes to whether it's art and working with clients and people like that, or even my equity and inclusion work. What I'm trying to do is get either systems and organizations or people to make space for people to be who they are. They're not just this label that you need to, to understand that people have many layers and we're all part of this equity and inclusion story. It's not like us and them. We all are have many layers.
And I think that some cultures are much better at, I think, propping up individuals of all background within their environments. And what I mean by that is, I remember I went up to visit a Native reserve, and it was north of Winnipeg. And I was sitting next to a fellow who told me his life story. And essentially, he had lost his wife, he had lost his child, and he was on the street. And things had gone really, really badly for him. And he had very little in life in terms of material wealth, and also in terms of, having really something that he could call his own, very little of that. And then the next thing I know, a drumming circle starts, of which you're familiar with, right? And all the people who are drumming are called up, and he's one of them, right? And he goes up and he drums with the rest of the individual, the rest of the drummers, and I'm listening really closely. The drumming goes right through my soul. Sometimes I have to stand up and walk around a little bit. And I'm thinking to myself, in my community, the Jewish community, sometimes you have to be a person of status before you'll get an honor. And I thought in the Native community, this fellow was seen as a human being. He was seen as an important human being, as in sync with everybody else, to the extent that he had the honor of being one of the drummers for that drumming session. And I learned a lot from that, and I saw how incredibly important it is for our cultures to recognize that it's not only the fellow, it's not only the woman who's driving around in a real nice Jag, who's worthwhile, giving an honor to or working together with in a particular project, but it's
Yeah,
anybody.
that's what we assume is valuable. We have assumptions in our society of what is
Yeah.
valuable. And so, no, that's a good reflection point for sure.
Are you a good sister?
I hope that I am. I am, my sister and I have gone through quite a journey in our relationship. And I'm just always, I think we always try to understand each other better and be there for each other, even with the ways in which we're different. And I look up to my sister so much, even though she's younger. I really trust her insights and her guidance and advice. So I hope by through that type of respect that I have, that I am a good sister.
Did you call her first when you got engaged?
She was there.
Oh,
She
she was
actually
there?
she coordinated it with him.
Oh, did she? Isn't that nice?
Yeah, so she is a good sister in that sense for sure.
Isn't that nice? Was that in Toronto?
Yes.
That happened in Toronto. Very interesting. Now, you still have a set of grandparents who are alive, who are with us, right?
Yes.
What's your relationship like with your grandparents?
My grandmother specifically is someone that has been very influential in my life. She has really helped me go through a lot of healing, and I have a lot of admiration and respect for her. I actually sometimes we joke that she's my real mom, and my mom's like my sister.
Yeah, right.
Not with any putting down my mom. I love my mom so much. But my grandmother, I guess, I think also because she moved her whole family, from one country to another, and that sort of like global aspect to her, I've just always admired. She was always very strong. She was the breadwinner of the family. I think she has a lot to her that is extremely admirable. She still works to this day, and she has her own little seamstress studio. So from the creative side, I think we both like I really love that.
Does she make your
And
dresses at all?
I think when I was younger, yes. Now she does it. She does more these really elegant drapes for people's homes and custom homes, and it's quite beautiful.
Like, for instance, the pictures that you sent me to advertise the show, you were wearing something very stunning. It was a little bit layered. I think it was gray. Beautiful. Did you buy that or did you make that?
I bought it.
Oh, it was stunning.
Thank you.
Now, your grandmother's name is Giuseppina. How do you say it?
Yes.
Giuseppina. And her husband's Mario. And then you had the other set of grandparents, is Carmelo and Sebastian. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, listen, we would be remiss if we didn't mention your parents, Giuseppe and Rina.
Giuseppe Benigni, yeah.
I love the names. I just love the
Thank you.
names. Yeah. What does your dad do for a living?
My dad owns his own company, and it's a landscaping company.
He's a landscaper. And
No,
is
he
your
owns the company. He owns
oh
the
he,
company.
okay, very good. And your mom, does she work?
She works in a law firm, and she is like a legal receptionist.
Her name's Rena. That's a very Jewish name.
Right?
Yeah,
She married a Jewish man, so
they must be very proud of you, no?
I feel like they are, and I have been very graciously blessed by my parents. They're wonderful people, and I've learned a lot from them.
Well, they've raised a beautiful person too. And you and your sister. I
Thank
met your
you.
sister a few times.
Yeah, you did actually.
Yes, I did. I did.
My
Well,
parents are.
Evelisa, it was really terrific speaking with you. I so enjoyed it. It was everything that I hoped it should be would be.
I'm
And
so glad.
yeah, I know you speak so wisely and so interestingly. And
There
you're on a
were.
bu beautiful journey.
Thank you so much, Avra. There was a couple of things I wanted to mention. I don't know
Yeah.
if
Go ahead.
you would edit it in somewhere, but one thing I wanted to mention is, I don't know how we would talk about it, but the uniqueness of, like, this would be a message for women in their 30s who might be listening, and the interesting experience it is to be a woman in your mid 30s and getting married at this time or getting engaged, and you're kind of like in this strange in-between state. You're not young, or people don't see you as young, but you're also not old. And starting your life and building a life at this time, there's not a lot of there's not quite a template out there that makes sense. And you're grappling with a lot of different expectations and standards and wanting to know, how does career fit into that? How does life and family and these different conflicting priorities and what the world expects of you and wants from you and what you want to achieve? It's just a really interesting time. And at some point, I'm going to need to write about it because my 30s have been this arc of, like, you go through your some type of crisis moment, realizing the way the past has influenced you. You go through, reconciliation in your own life with the people in your life. You may find a partner, or you may not, and that's fine as well. And yeah, it's just a very unique time. You're also at the height. You could be at the height of your career, or also not yet. It's interesting for fellow millennials.
Are you happy at this point in your life?
I'm very happy. I'm very happy, and I feel like there's still a lot I need to do. I don't feel like I've maximized. I don't feel like I'm at my fullest potential yet, but I feel like I'm on that train and that journey, and I feel like every year gets better, actually.
So I'm 62 years old. And I also feel like there's a lot of things that I need to accomplish. I'm definitely at not at my apex. And I have a class that I give on Sunday nights, and my eldest student is 91, the next one's 87, and they continue to grow every single day. And
Wow.
they would tell you that they haven't reached their pinnacle as well. So
Right?
I think people who have a growth orientation never quite feel as though, okay, I'm there.
Yeah. That's another thing I wanted to mention, which, remember when I emailed, give me a second, I have to turn off the stove. Remember when you emailed me, how am I feeling? And I'm like, I'm actually really excited. I feel like I have this insight. Because now I'm crafting a way. I recently did a talk to over 400 CEOs about culture change and organizations and what's the narrative that they tell related to equity and inclusion. And I love that. And I love how, if an organization can be really almost humble and vulnerable about its narrative, that can invite people in
Yes.
and it could be really powerful related to what I was speaking earlier about scouts. So I'm working through right now, how can the work that I've done in my art, where it's about the vulnerability of people and their own story and lifting it up and finding the beauty in that, and how my experience of using art as a tool to build bridges between people. It could be building bridges between communities in conflict or helping us to understand diverse perspectives. How can I talk about art as a tool for more equity and inclusion in this world and give talks to that DEI audience, I guess? So I'm still working on that. I have a few really good ideas that I've worked through with my mentor, Howard Ross. He's actually a wonderful, he's a wonderful, I guess, longtime expert in the field of equity and inclusion. And you should look him up. He's done some really great work. And he's now going more into this spiritual empowerment work. He does something called the Inner Journey. And yeah, anyway. So yeah, I'm kind of working through that now, this intersection of arts and equity and inclusion. And it's about similar things that even your show is about, like helping us all understand each other better, helping us feel like we belong, people's stories from different walks of life.
It's
So
a
yeah.
it's a challenge, and I see a similar challenge through someone whom I think I may have introduced you to at one point, Kim Smiley.
Okay.
And she's also a Harvard graduate,
Okay.
and she started up a jewelry company, but
Yes.
there's an intersection between the jewelry and I think like Tikkun Olam, which is repairing the world. It's a challenge, I think, to make people see what your vision is. Taking your art and inspiring people to be inclusive. And in her case, to use her jewelry towards making the world a better place. I can see how that is a challenge, but I do appreciate your challenge. I appreciate that you're doing it. And I believe in you. And I think that you're going to come to it at some point and you're going to have those aha moments and everyone's going to come on board and go, yes, here is the solution to a peaceful world.
I think that you've wanted to connect us for a while, and we did try at some point, but I think you actually summarized exactly why I think there's a bridge there, because we're trying to work through this intersection of something creative and the Tikkun Olam essentially
Yes,
principle.
that's right.
I didn't know that was the thing that would be bridging us. So, maybe we can try that again eventually.
Yes, let's do that. I want to conclude the show by once again thanking my very dear friend Evelisa. You did a terrific job.
Thank you.
You really did. And I had full confidence that you would, and you indeed, as I said before, lived up to my expectations.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, honestly. I also want to thank our listeners for coming back. This is our fifth show. We did a show last week with Josh Arbus, who's an incredible kid. He's 23 years old, and he has had the challenge of a very, very serious or severe stutter, or what we call a stammer. The response to that show was excellent. I think people listened to him and they were inspired by his courage and his bravery to pursue a life that he wanted. He became the president of the Hillel at McMaster University. He now has this terrific consulting job here in Toronto, working on major, major projects in the city of all different backgrounds. He's lots of friends, his beautiful girlfriend, and he is just highly successful. And I think the outcome of these podcasts is that pursue your dreams. Really work on understanding who you are and where your talents lie. If you have weaknesses like we all do, investigate those and try to strengthen yourself from that point of view. But mostly, look around, talk to strangers, get to know people, see what everybody else is up to, compare it back to your own life, and strengthen yourself through other people's narratives, because we can do that, right, Evelisa?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can do that. So thank you so much for listening. You have been listening to the Avram Rosenzweig Show. It is the show that schmoozes. And next week, I'm really excited because we're going to have a world-renowned photographer on the show. He was the photographer for the Queen when she came to Canada.
Beautiful.
And you know who I hooked up with yesterday, who I'm going to be speaking to in a couple weeks? I don't know if you know boxing at all. Have you ever heard of George Chevallo?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
I have now.
there you go. George Chevallo was Canadian heavyweight champion. He fought Muhammad Ali twice. He's
Oh,
85
yes.
years old. Yeah, he did not win, but he was never knocked down. And I'm going to be speaking to his son in a couple of weeks.
That's amazing.
So I'm quite excited about that. So thank you again for listening. Have a beautiful week, have a very sweet week, a very healthy one. And we look forward to being together again. Take care.
Thank you, Ephraim.
Thank you.